Hello, this is Claire Levy. Coming up in this edition of the DRWF podcast, Living with Diabetes, we have the latest instalment of our special series of programmes looking specifically at women's health. In this episode, we have a panel consisting of people we've already featured living with type 1 diabetes to explore common issues and solutions.
Yeah, I mean, like, when it comes down to type 1 diabetes and, you know, type 2 diabetes as well, no matter what diabetes it is, obviously the hormonal fluctuations, the menstrual cycle, perimenopause, menopause, unfortunately all of those things can have such a significant impact.
Fear of having UTIs, because antibiotics also impact your glucose levels, and it's a horrible vicious cycle that you cannot seem to get out of.
If you're then like very insulin resistant and you just program your pump to inject more, and then a day later suddenly you're in constant hypos because your menstrual, your cycle has changed and you don't know why.
Hear the full interview coming up next.
Views, information or opinions contained in podcasts do not necessarily represent the opinions, standards or policies of DRWF. The inclusion of details about products or services does not indicate DRWF endorsement of them. The aim of podcasts is to educate and inform, and we endeavour to ensure that the information provided in them is accurate. It's not a substitute for medical or health advice from a healthcare professional who's aware of the facts and circumstances of your individual situation. We always recommend that advice be sought from your GP or diabetes nurse before making any changes to medication or before using any products or services referenced by DRWF. Neither DRWF nor any of its employees or owners shall be held liable or responsible for the accuracy or completeness, for any errors or omissions in podcasts, or for any damage you may suffer as a result of failing to seek competent medical or health advice from a professional who is familiar with your situation.
So, welcome back, everybody. This is our little panel session. And do you all know each other from the world of living with diabetes? Have you all met before?
We know each other.
We do.
This is the first time that I've met you both, but yeah, social media, you kind of get to know everyone. You feel like you know people that you've met them before, even though you may not have done. Social media is crazy, really, isn't it, when it comes to getting people together and getting to know people, everyone getting to know each other.
It's made that huge difference, hasn't
it? Yeah, definitely.
And I also had a talk you did in Belfast.
Oh, yeah. You actually do a talk in Belfast.
So we've all talked individually, but if you just wanted to give me some views as a group about talking about living with diabetes, talking about the different stages of women's lives, how do you feel... if you want to just share some of those thoughts again.
Yeah, I mean, like, when it comes down to type 1 diabetes and, you know, type 2 diabetes as well, no matter what diabetes it is, especially for us ladies, I mean, there's so much that we have to deal with, you know, on top of everything else, you know, when it comes to diabetes. And obviously, the hormonal fluctuations, the menstrual cycle, perimenopause, menopause, unfortunately, all of those things can have such a significant impact on our management of our diabetes, to the point where we can literally do everything right, but feel like we're still getting it wrong. And I don't know about you guys, but I know that like the research is lacking a lot with female health and diabetes control, especially.
There's a big gap anyway in research when it comes to men versus women. Like, historically, there were a lot of men in clinical trials because women are more complicated and come with more risks because of, like, hormonal fluctuations and all of that. So it's not that we've always been included in that regard.
I remember being at a conference 2 or 3 years ago, and a manufacturer of CGM stood at the front of the room and said they had collected data from women for the analysis purposes of the accuracy of a device, but that data, the women were then excluded from the published data because the data was too noisy and it altered the MARD for their device and it altered the accuracy of their device. And I just remember sitting in that room thinking, I can't believe you've said this in front of 350 people, but you're saying exactly what we're talking about whenever we're speaking to each other as females living with diabetes.
Did you speak to them about it?
They left very quickly afterwards.
I wonder why.
They didn't hang around for questions.
So, thinking about women and UTIs, infections, living with type 1, living with type 2 can increase that. Does it impact, do you think, on how people manage?
I think there's the fear of having UTIs because antibiotics also impact your glucose levels. So it's not just that if your glucose levels aren't where you would like them to be for whatever reason, because there's so many reasons why you can have a UTI. It's knowing that if you have them, it's going to cause a change to your glucose levels. Antibiotics to fix the UTI are also going to change your glucose levels. And it's a horrible, vicious cycle that you cannot seem to get out of. Yeah. And you're always working to try and maintain optimal health as much as you can because of the consequences of other things being added in. So cures for something like a UTI don't just come as a cure and everything's fixed. You've a lot of other work that goes on in the background, and if you then have a period in the middle of your UTI, that's another factor that you're having to deal with and cope with.
I think as well, like for us ladies in general, the amount that we do every day, the stress levels that we experience, you know, just through looking after the families and, you know, doing all the housework, but then working, and it's a lot of additional stress. And that on top of having to manage diabetes at the same time, I mean, it's crazy really when it comes to think about, you know, what we have to do and how much we're trying to juggle at one given moment.
So you've got things like stress, sleep, good and bad, exercise that Vanessa works very closely with, talked about hormones. They all impact, don't they, on blood glucose levels and management. So how do you have any tips and hints for people to maybe think about how to manage that?
I mean, when I was growing up, I was never taught anything about the menstrual cycle and type 1 diabetes. And it was only through my own research that I learned more and learned what, you know, how it all worked. I didn't realise I had to adapt my insulin depending on where I was on my cycle. Again, you've got obviously big surges in estrogen, progesterone and ovulation. All of that can have such a significant impact. And again, like this isn't medical advice, but for me personally, if I was in my follicular phase of my cycle, that's where I'm most kind of like sensitive to my insulin. And then during the luteal phase, which is the second half of the cycle, that's where I need to usually make adjustments to my insulin because I get more insulin resistance. But I was never taught that. That was just through my own research. So yeah, definitely, I think there needs to be more awareness around that and education around that, especially for young teenage girls who've got type 1 diabetes and how to manage that later in life.
Greta?
I really agree with you. I think it was exactly the same for me. Like, by the time I found out about all of that, because I did my own research, I've already managed menstruation and diabetes for like 10 years without knowing why. And similar to what you said, if you're then like very insulin resistant and you just program your pump to inject more, and then a day later suddenly you're in constant hypos because your menstrual, your cycle has changed and you don't know why, it's just very confusing, and it, you know, leads to all these roller coasters that's very like hard to get out of. And I know a lot of people who say, oh, I know that because I've done my own research. But what we forget in this conversation is that not a lot of people, and not everybody has access to that kind of research or can do that kind of research. It shouldn't be on them to read up on their own, like, diabetes.
Sorry, I was just going to say as well, then you've got obviously ladies with type 1 diabetes or type 2 diabetes who also then have PCOS, or endometriosis and all of the other conditions that there are that then obviously then impact the female cycle, which could then impact insulin sensitivity, etc. So there's a lot to think about, definitely.
And Dawn, when you're working with ladies who are pregnant or want to get pregnant, this is another variation on a theme, isn't it?
It is, because you're having to allow for the fact that in that first trimester of pregnancy, you're constantly having hypos. If you're on pens in particular, you're not able to make the same fine-tuning that you can with a pump, and certainly with a hybrid closed-loop pump. But it's trying to provide that reassurance. This is a phase. It is requiring additional monitoring, and thankfully we have access now to devices which allow us to do the additional monitoring, which wasn't there whenever I was pregnant with any of my children. But also being prepared for that third trimester. Second trimester goes back to being a more normal phase with glucose requirements, or with glucose levels and insulin requirements. That third trimester can be a massive challenge. And when some women find that they're requiring less insulin in the third trimester, they think, oh, this is great. They don't actually realise that it's because that placenta is not functioning as it should. And that's not wonderful that you're requiring less insulin. It actually means there's something else going on, and you should really be contacting your obstetric team to have that conversation with them and your endocrine team to make the necessary adjustments.
Have any of you got one top tip for people then living with type 1 and type 2 diabetes?
I would say check, don't guess. I think that's like not only for checking our glucose levels, but even when it comes down to what we're eating, you know, just making sure that we're getting a good idea of how many grams of carbohydrates we're taking in and how many grams of protein, etc. Because I always say sometimes when we're guessing with diabetes, it's like trying to throw a dart into a dartboard blindfolded. And the more information we've got in front of us, the easier it'll be to be able to hopefully get an okay reading post-meal.
And factor in your activity levels as well. The fact that we're all walking around with phones in our pockets or with fitness trackers on, you're able to see how many steps you've taken over the course of a day. So looking backwards as well as looking at what's on the plate in front of you. If you are wearing a fitness tracker that records your sleep, have a look to see what your sleep has been like, because that has another impact. If you're not sleeping well, your cortisol levels are higher, and that is another thing which pushes up your insulin requirements.
I think that's a good point, but at the same time I find it very overwhelming, you know, like, I mean, I think the three of us are people that know how to work with all that kind of data, but it can be incredibly overwhelming, and you might have the sleep data and your menstrual cycle data and your activity, and still there's always something. For example, my data knows that I'm getting an infection before I have any symptoms. Just because I can't get it down, and I can check five different things, like eat, sleep, whatever, and it might still be high. I'm like, oh, maybe I'm getting sick, and I don't really feel it yet. So sometimes I feel like with all these things, I don't even know, you know, where to start, because it could be anything.
And we're also speaking from a place of privilege where we have access to those insulins, we have access to those devices. And not everybody has access or chooses to use. And I think for it, it's trying to manage what you can with the resources you have, with the bandwidth that you have available. I think you'd said earlier, Vanessa, you were about, you know, if you can look back at the end of the day and say, have I done the best for me? There are days when that best for you is going to be 100%. There are other days when the best you can possibly give your diabetes is 5%. Because of where you're at in your own life, hectic activities, everything that's going on.
And Vanessa, you talked about going diving, and I said, is there anything that your diabetes stops you doing? And Greta dives.
I know, it's incredible. The only reason I said diving, because I've always been told, we're not allowed to dive when we've got type 1 diabetes. And I always used to think, well, why? So I always thought, oh, I'd love to dive, but I wouldn't know where to start. So yeah, the fact that Greta does is very
positive. I'm also being told that I shouldn't do it, but that makes me really want to do it.
Yeah, I think that's it. Yeah, that's it.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely takes a lot of additional effort and work. Yeah. And when I first wanted to do it a couple of years ago, my endocrinologist did not want to sign my letter that I am allowed to do it. Mm. She's like, yeah, but, you know, it's basically like a black box when you're down there. I mean, you can't, you don't have your glucose. You can't just go up, depending on how deep you go. She's like, I'm not going to sign that. So, I found someone else to sign that letter for me, because I'm like, I'm not going to not do it just because you don't want to sign my medical clearance. I get why there are concerns around the topic, but I've done it so many times and I've never had a problem. That's I think it also depends a bit on how well you know your body, how confident you are in just like not seeing your glucose for a certain amount of time, because we've been talking before about how when we got diagnosed, when we were little, we... You know, we got these like 5 readings a day and we didn't really know what was going on in between them. And now we are so used to seeing a graph 24/7. So I think when I first did it and I was down there and I was like, I have no idea. I got my reading like 30 minutes ago and now I don't know what's happening. Yeah. It's something we're not used to anymore, I guess, somehow.
Yeah, definitely.
Because we're used to checking our watch and kind of being like, oh, okay, done. So,
yeah.
So we're just going to do a few quick-fire questions for a bit of fun, really. But do you know what your diabetes superhero name might be?
I think just Greta. I can be a superhero with my normal name.
Probably just a diabetic health coach.
Yeah.
Perfect.
Mood wife.
Mood wife.
I always get called by my Twitter handle whenever I meet people, and they're like, "Oh, you're mood wife."
It's funny, isn't it? Speaking about the social media topic, that some people would introduce themselves with their like first name. Yeah. I'm like, I don't know you, and then like, oh, but I'm this and that on Instagram. I'm like,
oh, I know you are. Gotcha.
Yeah. So maybe your handle's your superhero name. I think. What's your go-to hypo fix? We talked about this, I think, didn't we? What do you use?
Jelly beans.
It depends on the mood I'm in. Depends on what I have available as well. Yeah. Sometimes it's a carton of apple juice if I'm feeling particularly healthy and feeling like, I'm really on top of this, you know, keeping fit game. And other times it's a bag of Haribo or Skittles.
Do you ever have that when you go low and you're somewhere out and you're almost happy that you're having a hypo because you can eat something that you would never usually eat?
Totally.
Yeah, I have that sometimes, and then I have like a Twix or something, which I would never really, I'm not that into Twix, but I'm like, it just hits differently when you're low.
It's the size of Haribo bag though, isn't it?
Yeah.
Male.
I used to have jelly babies, but I don't have them anymore. Not that I don't have them, but it's just easy to have more than what you need because they taste so good. So I purposely have my glucose tablets, sometimes lift shots as well, because again, they're controlled. I know exactly how many I need. I don't really want more than three or four at a time.
There's no joy in a Dexter energy tablet.
The worst thing is when you were younger and then the packet would get wet and then they'd be rock solid, but you'd still have to have it because it was the only thing that you had on you at the time. So yeah.
So if you could swap your diabetes kit for a day, would you rather have a lightsaber or a magic wand?
Magic wand.
Every time.
Do you know what you do with your magic wand?
Make it so that every bar in the UK had diet drinks of every kind. Diet lemonade, diet Fanta, because every bar that you go into, it's only Diet Coke that they've got. So when it comes to getting a sugar-free drink or you wanted to have, you know, an alcoholic drink with a different mixer that's not Diet Coke, it's very difficult to find somewhere that does it.
And trying to explain to them why.
Yeah.
They look at you as if you're a bit daft.
Yeah.
And it's sort of like, I don't want full fat. A mixer, please. Which is harder to resist, chocolate cake or pizza night?
I'd say chocolate cake. I've got a sweet tooth. Don't know if that's a diabetes thing because I don't have it a lot. Maybe that's why. I'm not really that bothered by pizza.
No.
Oh, pizza night.
What's your favourite pizza?
Ham and mushroom.
There is something about pizza, though. It does rocket your sky, your blood sugars, doesn't it?
Yeah. Depends on the pizza. Some of them are actually very glucose-friendly. Other ones really aren't.
But glucose-friendly pizza sounds really boring.
It does, yeah.
Like, if I want a pizza, I don't want it to be glucose-friendly.
Yeah. You just never quite know until you have it. Do you know when you go to some really nice Italian restaurants? They seem to do their pizzas so that it doesn't cause that massive spike.
There's also a big difference between having a pizza in the US and having a pizza in Italy, I think.
Yeah.
But so to combine that, I would go for pizza and tiramisu after. So if I already, you know, if I'm going to have a hard night, I'm going to have a hard night, and then
I'll
just...
Which is scarier, do you think, running out of insulin or running out of Wi-Fi?
Insulin.
Insulin.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. Anything you would like to add to our conversation that you think we haven't talked about or you wanted to talk to each other about?
I get a lot of messages on social media around kind of like coming to terms with diabetes, and a lot of people that, you know, like struggle with the diabetes, or, you know, they don't know what to do or where to start. And I think, again, like going back to what I said earlier, there's no such thing as perfectionism when it comes to type 1 diabetes, and it's just about starting off small and building our habits up over time. And again, that acceptance that there are going to be bad days, there are going to be horrendous days, there are going to be days where we feel like throwing everything out the window, but that's just part of diabetes. I don't know if you ever have those days where...
Yeah. Threw my pump out of the window the other day. I'm back on MDI now.
Oh, you're back on MDI. How you found it?
I mean, I was on MDI for 18 years. Oh, then I switched to an AID system, and then I had so many, like, 40 infusion sets. I ripped it off. I threw it in the corner. I haven't picked it up since. Does happen.
Might have thrown my finger pricker in the fire on more than one occasion in the past. Yeah, just had enough of this.
In the fire.
That's
next level.
Yeah. If you're going to do it right.
I'm with you.
Yeah.
Well, on that note, thank you very much for joining us. And I'm sure you'll keep talking and keep discussing, keep sharing.
Yeah,
thank you very much.
Pleasure. Thank you.
DRWF, staying well until a cure is found.
You're listening to Living with Diabetes, the DRWF podcast, and our special series looking at some of the challenges facing women living with diabetes. You can find helpful guidance on all aspects of diabetes, together with details on how to support the charity, fundraising events, news and information on our website at drwf.org.uk. Thanks to all our guests who have helped us explore diabetes and women's health, and to you for joining us. Coming up next time, Sajila Kershi, who's living with type 2 diabetes and wants to raise awareness in her South Asian community.
Well, initially I was told I was pre-diabetic. And I, in all honesty, and it sounds ignorant, but I didn't know what that meant. And he said, you're going to have to use metformin, which I didn't know what that was. And I said, oh, no, but I don't really want to. And I really felt absolutely awful. You know, when I first got diagnosed, my mum, she was just like, oh, you know, so-and-so in our family, he had it, and his leg was amputated, and your grandfather's toe was amputated, and, you know, and so-and-so, they died, and so-and-so, they died too as well. So, you know, look after yourself. And I'm like, yeah, cheery thoughts, Mum. Thanks a lot, love. Thanks a lot for that, because now that's all I've got to look forward to. So at that point, I suppose I did feel like, oh, my God, that's it, my life's over. I don't see this as a terrible thing. This is an opportunity, because I've been given a kick up the backside. Like, life isn't just all hee hee ha ha and you just waltz through it. Things can go wrong. I think women generally are not good at speaking out about health stuff. Not because they don't want it, because they just feel like you just got to get on with it. Or certainly my generation.
This podcast has been supported by Abbott,
Living with Diabetes is a Blue Aurora media production for DRWF. Copyright 2025. Diabetes Research and Wellness Foundation. All rights reserved.